This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
It's FUBAR Radio. The time is 12 o'clock and this is Mark Dolan eats the news. Yes, indeed, it's been a big news, lots of breaking stories. If you want to interact with the show, at FUBAR Radio, Dolan at FUBARradio.com. We are going to chew through the biggest stories of the week. The show's going to be hilarious, shocking and libelous in that order. And to help me break the defamation laws of this country, I'm joined by two professionally funny people. Now, the thing about comedians is this. Generally, the challenge we have in our job is that everyone's funny. I've got a theory that all human beings are funny. It's the same theory that everyone can sing and everyone can probably dance if they put their minds to it. And everyone's funny. But these guys are so good, they actually charge for it. So their funniness is like invoiceable. That's what we're talking about. And to demonstrate just that right now, Nazim Hussain and Shazia Mirza, welcome to FUBAR Radio and the show that's egotistically called Mark Dolan Eats the News.
What up?
Hello, Mark. Hello.
And I'm lucky, really, because the show is consistently funny. And it's mainly because of my guests, but my name is in the title, so I get the plaudits.
Yeah.
Mm. I get the cash. I get the wonga. I get the spondulicos. And can I be honest with you now?
I
actually get the sex.
So you're like Alan Carr then?
I get like a straight Alan. Actually, no, I'm like a gay Alan Carr.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't know you were.
Do you know something any which way? It's 2016, Nazim. Hey, get with the program.
It's just with this fluidity.
He's not really a man. He's a woman. That's all the rage, you know.
It's how you identify each day.
If you ask my wife, I think I fall between two stools.
You're a man, you're a woman, you're both.
Yeah. I'm a bit of everything, but what you both are is just world-class,
brown.
Outstanding.
We're both brown. Yeah, that's why you invited us on, because we're both brown.
We're both brown, we're both Muslim. Do you just tick a box in one? This
are
you ticked all the boxes.
Are you Muslim?
I'm Muslim, mate.
Have you ever had anyone yell that on your show before?
This is perfect.
Allahu Akbar!
Death to America!
The thing about it is, at FUBAR Radio and on Mark Dolan Eats the News, we want everyone to listen. It's a global show.
Yeah.
And I ISIS can, you know, terrible people, yeah. But I still want them to listen because
you are the new, you know, Terry Waite. Mate. After this show, you're going to be hostage,
Everyone loves to laugh.
Listen, I wouldn't mind.
No,
being,
they don't. ISIS do not like to laugh.
I'm sure they have a comedy club.
Come on. I sent them a couple of jokes. They sent me a death threat. I don't think they like it.
They don't like your type of humor.
Naughty.
Are there rules for
FUBAR? Naughty.
That's how you refer to ISIS.
Naughty. You're so gay, Mark.
That's not the word they'll be using when you're
beheaded. You're so John Inman.
On YouTube.
Let me chop your head off. Naughty.
I know, I'm very British about these things.
Yeah.
You're so white.
I mean, whenever I just throw a homosexual off a tall building, I'm like, that is so not cricket.
No, it's not. Yeah.
That's just poor form. And I'm, you know,
you're
what I mean?
Such a camp white straight man.
When women get stoned for like not covering their bodies, I'm feeling like that's just beyond the pale.
You're like, that's not feminism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just like,
I'm going to write an angry tweet.
That's it. I condemn
I'm
it
going
fully.
To start a petition. Anyone joining?
That's how you're going to take down ISIS. Just like the French with the burkini ban thing.
Oh.
They're
yeah.
countering terrorism by...
I tell you what.
By policing dress.
Oh, God. It hasn't been banned in Burkina Faso.
Huh?
Well, that's a relief. Otherwise, there'd be a global incident.
I know. Let's eradicate global terrorism.
Now, Shazia,
let's go
Shazia
up to
Shazia
a woman
Mirza.
On the beach at gunpoint and tell her to undress.
Yeah. Pepper spray point. Three tough dudes with pepper spray, not guns.
You're wearing too many clothes. Strip.
No. Going up to women on the beach and telling them to remove clothes. That's what happens in Brighton
I
in
know.
July.
I know.
Right.
I know.
And that is that.
And the women are all very happy to do it.
That's actually what
no resistance there.
Quite great.
It's like, oh, I thought you'd never ask. Oh, let's get it off.
I'm doing this to counter terrorism.
It only has to be 11 degrees C for people in this country to strip off
naked,
get all their tattoos out, tattoos at the crack of their backsides. Let me show that off.
Do you have a tattoo at the crack of your backside?
No, I don't. Oh, okay. Because I'm a decent human being.
Now, it's worth pointing out, it's midday, it's 12:04. I'm looking over to my production team, my elite production team.
Who are also brown.
They are indeed.
What the hell is going on?
Well, basically, as you probably know, this show used to be very sort of apartheid heavy. Uh-huh. It was a strictly all-whites policy.
Well, on that side of the desk,
which I policed at the door.
Uh-huh. This is South Africa, 1946 in here. Yeah.
I had, like, you know the sort of Dulux colour chart thing? Yeah. There was one of those on the... You know, it was very vigorously. Mm. And then I took a knock to the head.
Right.
And suddenly I love the world. Great. And it's an open door policy.
Did you
now
put out a job petition in the Middle East recruiting all brown people to work on FUBAR Radio? And now all three of us have applied and all three of us got the job.
Can I be honest with you? What it is, you guys are punctual, you're good workers.
Yes.
Cheap. Cheap.
We work hard. We work all hours.
I saw a half
7-Eleven, 24/7, we're open.
Uber drivers. There was a half gingerbread man outside.
By the way,
I'm taking that.
Oh, do you know what I mean? Just do it. That guy's a minority. I was thinking about Brexit, by the implications of Brexit. Yeah. And one thing I thought is, I suddenly had this chilling moment, because I don't know about you guys, I was pro-Remain. I believe in the European project.
Right. Yeah.
But we've left. We have the very real possibility of, like, English people working in our shops again.
Mm.
And wait for it, making our food.
I mean, you're going to have to...
I don't want to kill
the mood.
The
shops will be open 9 till Gross. 4. There'll be a two-hour lunch break. They'll have 6 million holidays a year.
There goes flavour.
I mean, it's just going to be as bland as you like.
I mean, Prêt à Manger, I actually saw my first non-European person working in a Prêt à Manger. It was because you know how they have the badge? And it tells you, like, has a flag of which country. And Prêt à Manger is a celebration of all things European. Right. You're going to be served by someone from Romania or Italy or Spain. And do you not find that there's an amazing elite level of humanity that Prêt have tapped into?
Yeah.
And it's like 25-year-olds or 20-something, beautiful women with like rich dark hair, big brown eyes.
Yeah.
They seem overqualified, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I had my first English Prêt server.
Oh, gross.
And she's like,
Oh, man.
I'm like, okay.
You want a two-shot in it, right?
Yeah. Like that. I was like, can I have one for a two-shot latte, please, skinny?
Yeah.
And
she's like, whatever.
You want coffee? I got white coffee,
right,
and a black coffee.
Oh, Brian, get that coffee.
You know what? They got the machine. She walked past the machine and she unopened a jar of Nescafe and switched on a kettle.
She unopened it, so she closed it.
Yeah, welcome to Britain, everyone. Welcome to Britain.
I haven't quite cracked the English language yet. But I mean,
but you should work at Prêt à Manger.
Do you think, joking apart, do you think Britain will get more parochial post Brexit?
Oh, of course. If you take out all the culture, look at my uncle Keith. He loves the Polish.
I try not to look at your uncle.
Do you have an uncle named Keith?
Keith, yeah, Keith Vaseline. Yeah. My uncle Keith Vaseline. He is
Vaseline.
You're not from here. You don't know what...
I feel the need. I'm going to do that presentary thing. No, but you're so convenient. So are our audience as well, including my ISIS friends.
He's called Vaseline because he's very slimy.
Oh, right.
Basically, there's a Labour MP called Keith Vaz.
Right.
And he is quite a senior Asian Labour MP, highly regarded.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In fact, he was on track to a knighthood because he's the longest serving Asian politician.
25 years he's been in his Leicester constituency.
And, you know, a great operator. A tremendous self-publicist, and we'd put up with, you know, a couple of scandals and allegations about minor corruption here and there and passport applications and maybe a bit of money stuff. But anyway, this weekend there was an expose.
Oh, no.
And this happily married man with two children has enjoyed the company of a gay male escorts. I'm not sure, by the way, you can...
Two gay male Polish.
Okay, so what's the problem?
And one Brazilian.
Yeah.
So he's very multicultural. And also...
Isn't that just a plus?
We now know...
He's just reinvented himself.
We now know that's why exactly he was right. all for not leaving the EU. he was a fully blown campaigner to
fully
stay
blown.
In the EU.
Careful. I saw the video.
Fully blown. So...
The Brazilian finished him off.
So is he married or anything?
Yeah.
With two kids.
Wow.
Now, I mean,
now he represents a modern British family, you know?
You're
a
so
wife,
right.
kids, and two male misters.
Well, you're right. Is it the British way, which is to be married with kids and to be a tortured closet homosexual who has a sordid secret life, double life in Soho?
You don't get more British than that. And I feel that he was flying the British
flag. Well, give that man a knighthood.
I'm finally relating to him at last. There's a connection. It's like, he's a human being.
I know.
Right, the next mayor of London, you're looking at him.
Well, and do you know what? So what? What he does in his private life, I don't care.
Well, now it's his public life.
I don't care what he does in his private life because he's a really good MP. Mm-hmm.
So I've heard.
He's been in his constituency for 25 years. Him and Diane Abbott are the longest serving ethnic minority MPs. Yeah. He's really good at his job. Yeah. Under Blair's government, he was foreign minister. Yeah. I mean,
and that's kind of soft diplomacy. That's great for multiculturalism or hard diplomacy.
So what you're saying is by sort of sleeping with Europeans,
that's how alliances were formed back in the day.
At least he paid them cash on time.
See, back in the day, right? If there was a king from one country and a king from another, they couldn't have sex with each other because that would be frowned upon. So they'd get they'd marry their daughters off.
Oh yeah,
to this, you know. Whereas now he's just. He's creating ties and bonds with other people from other countries.
So basically, all this, you know, the sort of the tit job that he got from one of them when on his chest.
What?
You've not seen the video.
He got a tit job from a guy.
I never went that far. I never saw that. What?
But I think about that. Sounds very inflammatory.
Did he do that?
Yeah. Well, I think there was some sort of manipulation onto someone else's rib cage. And
so he came on someone else's ribcage.
I may have dreamt a lot of this.
Do you know what? There was two Polish and there was one Brazilian and they were off a website. That's how he got them.
Do you know what I think was happening?
He paid them. Yeah. He paid them on time. He employed them. Yep. He gave them a job. I mean...
Not like jonglers.
Yeah. Did he use a credit
check
card?
Check to follow, I tell you.
Do you have the thing in Australia, like politicians always use the credit card to do dodgy stuff? Right. Did he do that? And they always get busted.
There was drugs, but he didn't take any of... He didn't take the hard drugs.
But he didn't call the police on the drugs.
No, he paid for them for the others.
But I realise what we're saying now is that with this little encounter, what he was really doing is negotiating a trade deal with Eastern Europe and Brazil.
Yep.
Yeah.
And this was, you know, back in the day, they'd go for dinner and stuff like that. But I suppose 2016... Mm. It's a bit more intimate.
He was doing
the
work of the Remain campaign. He was out there solidifying ties.
Do you know what? I think every MP has got these stories in the closet. I think this is why Boris Johnson did not become Prime Minister.
Yeah.
It's because Rupert Murdoch has got a sex tape on him. Something
David
like
Cameron...
That.
Sure, I mean, he... David
I'd rather
Cameron-
leave the EU than watch Boris Johnson having sex. I would rather leave the EU.
Just the EU or the world itself? I don't know. I just always thought MPs in Britain, that's how we perceive you guys. You do dodgy stuff sexually. Like David Cameron was Prime Minister and the pig thing.
Yes.
If he didn't have sex with a dead pig's head, would he be Prime Minister? We don't know. But he was Prime Minister and his history included
that.
Well,
I think that's disgusting, simple for the fact that it wasn't halal.
Yeah, I mean, it was disrespectful.
If it was halal, I'd be all for it, but it's not halal, so...
Well, we don't know.
Well,
it's just
disgusting.
But what he does
in his private life, I think, is...
David Cameron with the pig?
All of them. What they
can
do
I say,
in
when,
their
you're, when,
life?
You're, when you're a Prime Minister, we should be allowed to know all of your private details.
Really?
Yes. That's what, you know, if you want to be... How bad do you want to be PM?
But what
Tell
if you
everything.
Are great at your job, but in your private life...
You're crap.
You go with Eastern European hookers. So what?
Just disclose everything. We own you. When you're the Prime Minister, we own every aspect of your life.
Well, you could say that about celebrity.
It's going that way because now the Prime Minister has to publish their tax return.
Publish tax
Australian PM
publish
do that?
The sorts of condoms that you buy or don't buy. Any and all partners.
Yeah. What about your shopping habits? If you sort of go for those sort of meal deals at Tesco where you get crisps and a drink. Should we know?
Yeah, we want to know how long our Prime Minister's going to live.
I mean, would you... Only Mark would know about these deals going on where you get crisps and a drink.
Listen, I'm a tired ass too.
You can tell my career's hit the skids. You know what I mean?
I'm in for a sandwich, but Mark goes for the deal.
Yeah, but that's because you're freshly off the telly and a hit run at the Edinburgh Fringe. You probably one
Did
of those
you have
people.
A hit at the Fringe?
I knew you were a hit at the Fringe, that's why I couldn't
get
tickets.
Were you a hit?
Oh, I don't know, mate. Can you say that about your own show? Yes, you can.
Oh my God, have you been on Facebook? Have you been on Facebook lately? Oh my God,
mate,
I can't stand this. You come back from Edinburgh, and people are like, "I would like to thank my mum and my dead grandmother and the Queen and my accountant and my lawyer for making my Edinburgh show so amazing. Here are all my 5-star reviews. Thank you, thank you." No shame. People have gone.
And
no
actually,
shame.
11 people have been to see that show.
I know.
They've done it above us.
And your reviews are from your mum.
Yeah, or your elephant.com.
I never had your mum.com.
But thanks to the Free Fringe, they've actually turned over probably 10 grand's worth of fivers and pound coins and all the rest
of
it.
This kind of self-promotion and no shame. I think it's a very new generation thing.
Well, I mean, we're going to come back to Keith Faz in a second, but while we're on this, is it acceptable to retweet praise?
Look, when you need to sell tickets, mate, you got to see what you're going to do.
I did my show this year as well, and I got a really nice tweet or something, and I retweeted it, and then someone, it said Mark's great or whatever, and someone wrote, yes, and clearly very modist too, ..
Oh my God, did you delete it? And I
wasn't going to rise to it, because I think you can't engage with, I mean, that, by the way, that was a very polite troll. That wasn't exactly mentally scarring, but it rankled a bit.
Yeah.
And I just, my thought was, I'm really sorry. It's costing me £8 million to be here.
It's a retweet.
I've got some tickets to sell,
you
said.
Twitter doesn't really do anything anymore. Twitter's dying, everyone. Facebook's where it's at.
Yeah.
Snapchat. Really? Get on Instagram.
Do you think that Twitter doesn't sell tickets?
Twitter is
definitely
just,
not. Twitter is rubbish.
No one uses Twitter. Hey, if there's any Twitter users out there, get in touch,
Twitter.
But I'm sure there's not.
At FUBAR Radio, here's what I think, and for my penny's worth, but you guys are more down with the kids than I am, but here's my theory.
Yo.
When Twitter started, it was amazing, because what happened is that you would follow people that you were into, and so I immediately followed a lot of my heroes, like Steve Martin and people like that, John Stewart, Conan O'Brien, Shazia, obviously, Nazim Hussein, always.
Oh, there you go.
Thanks for, it only took you 6 months to follow me back, Nazim, but it's not like I've noticed.
Did you seriously follow me 6 months ago? You're a liar. Really?
I'm a liar. It's a good anecdote, though.
It's like a week ago.
Of course it was. I finally liked
you.
It took me ages to get into your
stuff. I watched you on Balls of Steel way back in the day. I really loved
that
show.
For that.
And then I was on the Australian version, and I was like,
were you?
Not because of
you. I don't know why, but I was ejected from that production. And I even auditioned with an Australian accent. I'm like, hey, Cobbers, g'day. It's Balls of Steel.
They only audition people that look like you in Australia.
Yeah, well, so I heard.
Yeah.
The guy, I saw the guy that did it, and he looked like me if I'd taken better care of myself.
Yeah, and if you were from Nazi Germany. Like, he's very Aryan.
He was definitely to the right of Attila the Hun. But here's the thing.
Anyway, yeah, go on.
So my theory about Twitter is that you'd follow people that you like, and then every morning you wake up and you'd go on Twitter, and it would be like your own personal news feed. You're like, what's Steve Martin saying today? What's the President of the United States saying? You know, and all these curate Morrissey, whoever, but whatever your thing is. And you would read the Twitter feed, and that was like your kind of microblogging newspaper of the day.
Yeah.
But then what happens is that lots of people start following you. Out of politeness, you follow back, or at least I do, and it becomes junk mail.
It's just junk.
So now people don't read their Twitter feed.
No.
And if people don't read it, there's no audience, there's no platform, and that's why you're on Twitter.
So it's dying.
Now it's just my junk mail. What do you think?
No, I absolutely agree with that. I think now everyone is a broadcaster. Everyone has a platform. Everyone feels like whatever they've got to say
is
important.
Everyone's got an opinion.
Not everyone is worth listening to.
Oh, my God.
Just understand that.
Some people should not be allowed to have an opinion.
Yeah.
We're here now, Shazia. We've got 45 minutes. We better just crack on with it.
Oh, we've got heaps of opinions.
Our opinions are important because, you know, we're a minority. We're being suppressed.
People pay to see you and hear you guys. That's why you're here.
Well, I mean, right now they're not paying.
Has anybody
paying with their time and with probably valuable work that's not happening.
has anybody been...
I think this show costs the UK economy approximately 0.01% of growth. I feel like things slow down when we're on air. Do you know what I mean?
But this is great for conservatively minded people, because aren't they all about maintaining the status quo?
They massively are. That's what they do.
If we speed things up, we're just moving in a new direction.
All right, so Twitter's dead and Facebook is where it's
Snapchat,
at.
Snapchat, apparently. Yeah. I was at some conference.
What's Snapchat?
You sound like someone who's over 50.
What is Snapchat?
Snapchat is basically safe sexting. That's how it started. You send someone a video or a photo, disappears within 10 seconds. seconds or however long you set it for. But you can also broadcast a story out into the world. It lasts for 24 hours. People can view it as many times as they like. But it basically means there's no pressure to take a photo knowing that it's going to be on your page or your Instagram feed or whatever for the rest of your life. It just goes.
So you can just unless someone does a screenshot of it and then
I mean that's what you know. But then you can you're told that you've been screenshotted and then then the trust is gone.
Oh, software which tells you.
We'll do a Snapchat right now.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, we're on Snapchat.
Yay!
See, the quality of this snap is just...
This is amazing.
Please delete this quickly. It's going to be embarrassing.
It's going to last 24 hours,
So you can
guys.
Put a picture of your vagina on there and just people can see it for 10 seconds.
I've done that.
You can send a private snap. You took a photo of your vagina.
Yeah.
Well,
I gained 10,000 followers. But they're all bad people.
Do you know the funniest thing?
You should
thing
see some of the DMs I get.
Do you know
wow.
The funniest
I mean,
thing?
I've met a few of them out of politeness. I've had a good night, but you know. quite Keith Vaz style, do you know what I mean?
Keith Vaz, I mean,
two poles and
the funniest thing about
Uncle
him was,
Keith.
Let's get this party started. I mean,
that's what he said at the beginning of the encounter.
I mean, mate, that's what I want to hear at the start of a party.
Who says that when they want to get a party started?
Well, 90s DJs.
Hello, everyone.
Do you know what it is?
What?
It's Alan Partridge, isn't it?
Two Polish prostitutes in my living room, plus one Brazilian. How about we get the party started?
Do you remember that episode of Alan Partridge when he's with these builders and he's trying to seem heterosexual? So he points out some woman. He goes, "Oh, look at her! I'd love to have it off with her."
That's how dudes talk.
It is, of course, it is. Yeah, the real men do. So you said that you don't think it matters what he does in his private life, but what about this? The guy is the chairman of this select committee that oversees and looks at
prostitution and drug laws, including prostitution and drug laws.
Does this make it mean?
So the reason for your question is you're wondering whether it's okay to have a subjective bias towards something that you're making a decision on.
Yeah.
Who cares if you're going to be? That's just like saying, are you interested in sport? Well, then you can't be on the committee for sport because you haven't sort of special interest in sport.
If Keith Vaz was not in the public eye and he had sex with three Polish prostitutes and a Brazilian or whatever, nobody would give a toss. This is what people do in normal life all the time, don't they, Mark?
And it's a social fact.
You've been on my Facebook page.
Just because he's in the public eye,
I'm very close to Backlav. He's just a friend.
All of a sudden, he has to suppress his sexual desires and lead a vanilla lifestyle.
Well,
it's
that's us
for
told.
A brown guy to live a vanilla lifestyle.
Okay, but can I only say one thing? What about this idea of posing as one thing and being another? So what about the campaign leaflets with the wife and the garden gate and the kids holding hands?
But that's not
posing. That's a reality. That is his life.
That is a reality of his life. There are also other realities.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to take a photo of, you know, all of my friends and all the people I've ever met. You know?
His wife probably knew. His wife probably
can
knew.
Can I be honest with you as a married man? You get to that point in the marriage where the wife... she's grateful for that kind of thing. Because she just thinks these
day
guys
off.
Are doing some of the heavy lifting that I don't have to do.
Yeah, honestly.
Isn't it?
Honestly.
Not dissimilar to having a cleaner.
Honestly, she's probably relieved I don't have to sleep with him.
Can I ask, how did the Asian community react?
That's a great question. You
know, he's very well respected in the Asian community in Leicester. Because Leicester is mainly Asian. And they really look up to him and respect him. And they've been on his side for 25 years.
Yeah.
Always voted for him. Mm. And I think, you know, because he's a good MP, he's really good at his job. They'll stand by him.
Yeah.
But you know how judgmental Asian people are.
Mate.
They'll probably be like, I don't believe it. He was doing
such a good boy.
I mean, I don't mind the prostitutes, but they were men. They were men.
Oh, maybe they're like, I don't mind that they were men, but they were Brazilian.
And Polish. We are too many Polish here. We are overcrowded.
Can I say,
send them back.
I don't want to indulge in stereotypes, but do you think if the hookers had been like junior doctors, it would have been acceptable?
Oh, they would have loved it. They would have loved it. It'd be like, they would have been like, oh my God, they're helping us out.
Senior my tax accountant.
Having an affair with a doctor. What about yours?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what.
He was only a GP, not even consultant.
You can't top that. It's FUBAR Radio. The phone's ringing and it's Keith Vaz's lawyer. I can't wait for that chat. We're going to talk about James Bond next because Daniel Craig has been offered $150 million.
No, let's talk about Keith.
Is he worth the money? Maybe Keith Vaz could be Bond. 007, shaken, not stirred.
Tell me why you're kicking every rose that you come across. around to where you stand, hand in hand, going it alone. Don't you see, you're never gonna be saved by kicking roses where you stand.
Presents
Background and Chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James.
Taylor Swift and Kylie Jenner apparently have new tip.
Are we sure that these guys have actually got their
trust
boobs?
Trust me,
are
Noel.
Are we sure that these are new boobs? Because
trust me, I'm a boob connoisseur, and
I'm a boob connoisseur. I bet I've touched more breasts than you have.
but definitely Taylor Swift. She was like a little. She was a member of the Itty Bitty Titty Committee, and now she's. Definitely not. Like, almost overnight.
Boob club. What's the first rule of boob club? We don't talk about boob club.
Every Friday.
Background and Chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James.
From 4 PM on FUBAR Radio.
Yes, indeed. It's a brilliant show. It's FUBAR Radio, 24 hours a day. Ad-free online, the UK's largest ad-free online radio station. Keep it FUBAR. It's great to be back. I, myself, and indeed Shazia Mirza and Nazim Hussein
what
are with
up?
You to eat the big stories of the week. We're all fresh from the Edinburgh Fringe. Did you guys enjoy it this year? Was it fun?
Mate, I had a great time. Is this on? I never really know if my mic.
Tell you what, you are so on.
I'm geek fit.
You couldn't be more on.
Edinburgh Fringe was a crazy month. I heard, this is a stat that I heard, 3,000 shows at the Edinburgh Fringe. The average size of the audiences were 3 people. So often there'll be comedians taking like one or two audience members out for dinner and then doing their jokes across the dinner table.
I've considered that. It's an ambition of mine to dine with my fans.
Really?
Both of them.
They don't have to talk. They just sit there and you just, hey, you know, the funny thing about, like, isn't that, I'd love to see that. That is, if I have to do that at one point in my life, that will finally,
I think
how
potentially
was your show,
break
though,
be good.
So it was good. People laughed. And
it was good.
The only thing I would say is...
How do you want me to describe it? Like,
I don't know, because you asked some people that, that was amazing.
I'll tell you one thing, though. I'm sorry to say this. I'm going to be really honest with you. There are no harder audiences on the planet than the Edinburgh Fringe audiences, who are lovely, but a little bit chin-stroking and quite thoughtful, almost like a theatre-going crowd. And I think it takes a few shows just to realise that, because you come off the back of a load of previews where you've been around England, where everyone's pleased to see you.
I was hilarious from the offset.
Well, I know, but that's you.
Right from the first show, I was storming.
Yeah,
people were standing on the chairs. This is amazing. So I don't know what experience you're talking about, Mark, because mine doesn't fit into that.
They're afraid of you, that's why. It's nervous laughter, Mirza.
No, it's not. Any laughter will do.
Yeah. We will take all flavours. Now, tell you what, let's talk about James Bond. Daniel Craig's been offered $150 million for two more 007 movies. Is this a regressive step? For me, I feel like it seemed like the last film, he seemed quite lackluster. And in all the publicity around the film, he's like, I hate doing this. If you see me in a James Bond 007 dinner jacket again, shoot me.
Yeah, it's a great strategy and it's clearly worked. It's paying off $150 million to overcome that apathy. But you know what? I feel like producers of Hollywood, they don't want Idris Elba so much that they will pay that boring white guy $150 million to stay in the job.
I really miss Roger Moore. Roger Moore, the hairy chest. He was a proper Bond. This kind of metrosexual Bond doesn't do it for me. What are you? Are you a man, a woman? What are you?
Do you think he's not manly enough?
He's not manly enough. Look at Roger Moore. I mean, I just thought Sean Connery. I mean, they were proper Bond.
Chest hair, slight man boobs.
Pierce Brosnan?
Even Pierce Brosnan. This kind of metrosexual borderline, am I a man, am I a woman, am I a Whittaker?
Skinny fit suit.
I mean,
all these emotions.
Manicured nails.
And the face, the everything. Yeah. I just don't think it's very sexy for today's modern woman.
Yeah. So you're not aroused with
I think we need a Muslim James Bond. Oh! Oh, hairy chest, hairy face, hairy legs, hairy buttocks. Hello, Akbar! Oh my God, so sexy.
Next
so
thing you're going to be suggesting a female James Bond, aren't you?
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, the world's gone
women
mad.
Women are equal now.
It's a political correctness gone mad.
Women are out of the house now and they're doing stuff. And they're get used to it.
No, get Idris Elba, man. That guy, I've binge watched, what's the Luther?
Why won't they have him as a Bond? Is it because he's black?
It's because he's black?
Really?
It's because he's black. Yeah, because he's black. He can scare the shit out. He's scared. Like, you've watched Luther? Have you seen The Wire?
Why can't
he can
they
solve
have,
crimes?
But why can't they have a black Bond?
I don't actually blame British audiences, you know. I think that the UK would embrace
it's not up to the
UK.
Bond.
It's not up to the UK. The American market, it's Hollywood, because Hollywood have a theory that if you put a black man at the top of a movie, starring in the film, it makes less money.
Really? And but it's have, okay to have a gay man.
Well, I know. They
what about
claim,
Will Smith?
What about Tom Cruise?
In, doesn't he? What about Denzel Washington,
Tom Cruise,
Barack Obama.
Pretending to be straight, selling movies. What a bit of a con that is.
Of course Tom is not here to defend himself. And
you know
we can challenge
that. There's some gay Scientologists front this movie. But yeah, that'll make millions.
If the next Bond movie was set in America, Idris Elba would have a difficult time fighting crime because he would be getting shot by the cops. Oh, bit of political satire.
We've got, the thing is, they wouldn't have Idris because, you know, they've got a black president in America, but he's not really black. Do you know what I mean? He's Obama black. He's not really black.
Is that
he's
it?
Obama black.
He's, if they had a black James Bond like Idris, that's too black.
I see. All right.
See,
Obama is an acceptable black.
Do you think he'll go into acting once he's done?
No.
He can act. He can tell jokes.
He can drop the mic.
Well,
that's
the big sort of I don't know if it's not really a meme, but the big image of the week is Obama in a black tracksuit, and people have had to sort of a lot of fun with it. Because basically this man could wear a bin bag and look sexy.
He's very handsome.
Yeah. And you do wonder, you know, post-White House, the guy's box office, isn't he? And he's not going to be... It's not going to be like... Jimmy Carter, who disappeared, like George Major.
Jimmy Carter.
George Bush, who becomes, like, kind of clinically depressed or something and starts painting pictures of... Like, have you
is
said,
that what happened?
George Bush, yeah, he started to just paint pictures of presidents and he painted a picture of Putin and he was like, why didn't you come and have a look at my picture?
Well, when you commit
genocide,
you do need anything therapeutic to help you get through the rest
there's
of
always
your life.
An emotional hangover.
Yeah.
But most politicians, once their career is over, they disappear from public
Not
view.
Not Tony Blair. Oh, my God, you can't get rid of this man. Let me just commit genocide and then be a world peace ambassador. Let me just make 10 million from every single viewing. Let me rent out my 32 houses in London. I'm not going away.
How old is that guy?
He's about 60 now.
But Blair, maybe early 60s, yeah. I would say so. He's got plenty of life in him yet.
But what happened is after he committed mass genocide, he converted to Catholicism.
Did he?
Immediately after he took us to the war in Iraq, he
if he really meant to apologise, he would have become a Muslim.
Yeah.
If he felt bad.
Infidel. Infidel. Well, yeah, you know, we all know what's going to happen to these infidels.
We know.
Generally,
your face gets really terrifying.
It's quite spectacular. General received wisdom is that all careers in politics end in failure, just by definition. It's like a lost election, or you get turfed out by your party, or whatever. He has had, although
Obama, about to win.
Some would say that perhaps he's had an indifferent 8 years, possibly because of all of the stumbling blocks of the House of Congress stopping him doing what he's going to do. But essentially, he leaves a winner, doesn't he? I mean, he comes out.
Who, Tony Blair?
No, Obama. Obama is...
Blair's already out.
Obama's... So here's my question. Is Obama going to be the first sort of ex-politician that remains?
Yeah, he's going to leave on a high, man.
What's he going to do? Because, I mean, you suggested Bond.
He's iconic. Bond. What he has achieved in his life has been iconic. You know, he was America's first black president.
He's going to be the UN guy
and
or something.
And his name, he was Kenyan. You know, he's from a Muslim background. Yeah. not Muslim himself, but his father
the Americans,
was.
Are the Americans silly for having this rule where you only get two terms? Because we know if Obama was there,
wouldn't be happening
it
now.
It would be term number three.
So you're basically
slam dunk.
Yeah. You're setting it up for dictatorship. Imagine Trump had three terms. Who is going to be president, by the way?
By the way,
yeah.
Barack Obama is 55.
He looks amazing, and he's incredibly young still.
At least 2.5 decades of looking amazing together.
Yeah, and it's impossible for him to be quiet for 2 decades of his life, just not do anything.
And what's equally as amazing is his wife.
His wife, you know,
she writes and does her own speeches.
And here's the thing. Here's what's going to happen. She's going to be president in 8 years' time. And he is going to be—he's going to be the first lady. Right.
They've had everything, haven't they? They've had a white bigot, they've had a black man, they've had a lesbian, and now they're going to get a black woman.
Tony Blair is Tony Blair.
You know, Hillary Clinton is the only president, if she becomes one, that has slept with another president.
That's hilarious.
Nice. That's a fun fact.
That's
fun
a fun fact.
Bill Clinton is 70. Tony Blair is 63. And David Cameron is 49. David Cameron's a child.
Yeah.
He's in his 40s.
And don't we know it? Oh.
Yeah.
When did he have sex with a pig's head? How old was he?
Probably when he was 40. It was probably Boris Johnson.
Your nominations for the new Bond, please, at FUBAR Radio, dolan@fubarradio.com. After this, we're gonna play a record, and then we're going to talk about whether there should be grammar schools, should we embrace inequality, and also we're going to have a look at ageism as well, because a guy that basically partly invented the Mac computer couldn't get a job at the in a Californian genius bar of a branch of the Apple store. And we've got the new Apple iPhone 7 coming out today. We'll speculate on what it's going to look like. I know. Stop the press. Stop what you're doing. A new iPhone's coming.
Go and queue up in the street for a phone. How sad is your life?
Do it, but keep listening to this until one and then do what the hell you like. Here's Gallant and Bourbon.
People are queuing up for I'm the heaven's horseman. Hey, on quilted sand dunes. With my neck wide open, hey, I pray for refuge. 'Cause since I've been found, I've been living a life in cages, withering down to the champagne quicksand, wrestling down, I've been dragging away.
Nolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
It's FUBAR Radio, it's 12:41. It's Mark Dolan Eats the News in the company of Shazia Mirza and Nazim Hussain. Two brilliant comics. By the way, we'll quick kind of on-the-spot comedy review because you guys went to see Amy Schumer. Oh,
yeah, we didn't go together. No. Not all brown people do stuff
together.
We're
not supposed to sit together. No, in arenas and things like that.
Well, I think the two of you together, that would overwhelm the security, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. There's two of them next to each other.
I already had my bags and pants checked.
Yeah.
By choice. So you went to see Amy Schumer at the O2 Arena, which is
15,000 people there.
How was the gig?
You know what? Normally you go to stadiums, right? You pay £100. People paying £80 to £100 a ticket. You see a big show, loud music. There's like 5 to 10, 20 people on stage,
yeah,
filling up
Rolling Stones, whatever.
Rolling Stones, rah! You get a visual and it's an experience.
Madonna, Kylie, whoever.
Kevin Hart performed. He had fire on the stage, and Amy Schumer, great comic. I just don't feel like she brought that arena energy that was required.
How long did she do?
She did an hour? Over an hour.
It was an hour and 20.
An hour and 20, and were kind of monotonous, like not really breaking out of the format for that length of time?
She's a great performer, great act, as in like she's a great actor. You know, she. I feel bad as a comedian just shitting on another comedian. But I was just like waiting. I think the whole crowd was just waiting to go, come on, we want to laugh. Because there were times when she'd mention things and the crowd would go, woo! I love that person that you just mentioned. So the energy was there.
Yeah.
She didn't really back it up.
I think, you know, we've had in our lifetime so many greats. I mean, iconic greats like Richard Pryor, Robin Williams,
Seinfeld.
Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle, Chris
Eddie
Rock.
Eddie Murphy.
Shazia Mirza.
I mean, even Eddie Murphy, Joan Rivers, George Carlin. Yeah. We've had so many iconic greats that you just, when you've seen them, you think, oh my God, they really blow you away. Not only are they funny, they take the stage, they set it alight. But you know, those people became great after doing it for kind of 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
And we live in a culture, celebrity culture, where you can become famous overnight. You can go very, very far on very little talent. And it's really not about the talent. It's about the marketing.
How you look, what your angle is, maybe.
It's about what's the zeitgeist.
She's got an angle, hasn't she?
What's the zeitgeist?
What is the angle? It's kind
feminism
of,
is in fashion. You know, feminism, being a feminist.
But her act is very unfeminist because it's all about how she's ugly and her boyfriend does unspeakable things.
She says that she's a feminist and that what she's doing and what she's saying is because she can. Like, she has this joke where she says, you know, I'm 150 pounds and I can catch a dick any day of the week.
Right. Okay.
It's hard for me to relate to that.
And that's her. That's what she's saying is, look, I'm a fat girl. But I can get dick any day of the week that I want. I'm a feminist. I can do what I want.
Right.
And that is kind of her point of view on stage. Look, I'm fat. Look, I'm ugly. Look, I did this.
But you could also take that in a positive way. You could say that's a body positive, sex positive kind
of. But I do what I like.
What's curious to me and interesting is that I'm a keen, as we all are, observer of comedy here at Stateside, Down Under, and I'm interested by everything. I must say, I find the vast bulk of American stand-up really depressingly like dark, negative, nihilistic. It's all about, it's just basically sex, 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 depraved, drugs.
Nassim, what did
stop
you think?
Stop describing my act.
I sound a bit like a bloody priest.
She had a warm-up act, Rachel Feinstein.
Oh, look, I mean, the thing is, she's another comedian. She
had another female comic.
But, like, I don't have any expectation. Like, it's just someone else that, I don't know how to... I've seen lots of comedians perform, and she was another comedian. She was great, she did a good job. But, you expect things of Amy Schumer, though.
Did people laugh?
I feel bad to say that.
Yeah.
People laugh,
Yeah, yeah.
The audience is great. Like, they're all warm. People, when you pay that much money, you come wanting a good time.
Yeah.
It's not like people, it's not like the more you pay, the more pressure you're putting on the community. You're there, you're wanting a good time.
Yeah.
So they're ready to laugh.
Can I just say, I'm on tour at the moment. My tour's starting. Tickets to my show are between £10 and £15.
Yeah.
If you'd like to.
And you give 100%, and you don't have a set list, which you turn over halfway through the show. So you get 100%.
I feel so bad, bagging out another comedian. She's obviously worked very hard, and she's obviously That's the positive.
I'll tell you what I'm going to say to you in her defence and make you assuage your guilt a little bit, yeah. Which is I think that, you know, it's the power of telly that she's become a sort of global celebrity who's also a stand-up comedian. And sometimes TV fast-tracks you to an audience that's bigger than perhaps, you know, you're ready for. Maybe she's a couple of years away from that level. But because you're TV... Okay.
It's not that. Like, bang. The thing is, right, if you're given an opportunity to perform to a million people and you're a stand-up and that's your dream, you know, go out there. I wouldn't say don't do it because you're not, you know, just try your best. I just don't feel like she was really treating the gig with a great degree of respect. I feel like she came out of that. She wasn't sweating. She wasn't like working hard. Yeah. I feel like she kind of didn't really appreciate that. She's in another city, in another country, and there's a stadium full of people, two nights in a row, there to see you. That's like a dream come true for a performer, for a comedian. Like,
what did
Kevin Hart performed at the O2 5 years ago, I saw him. At the end of his show, and he's continued to do his show. At the end of his show, he was like, I can't believe that here I am. I'm just a kid from Philadelphia, and oh my God, I'm in the O2 Arena. You guys are the best. This is, and he was almost brought to tears. Like, I'm not saying every performer should do that, but you sort of want to see the performer really appreciate
maybe
the moment.
What did the other comics think that you were with?
I just think that they also just thought, I just think maybe it's just a Hollywood-ish thing.
Because
she kind of came up, she didn't really come up through, if you're stand-up working.
You've seen there is a TV act who's suddenly made it onto a big live stage platform.
It's like these people.
It's like she's like a TV animal.
It's like these people, Mark. It's like these people on YouTube that do YouTube videos and have like a million followers, and then they go on stage and they can't do their stage act.
Yeah.
Because they haven't done the graft. They haven't been up to Edinburgh for 10 years in a row, died on their ass to three people. And that
is what...
Can you
not be so personal about this?
That's what makes you good, Mark.
Okay, but you know what? Okay, fine. If that YouTube person suddenly became successful and had a huge audience, I wouldn't mind even if they performed an average show. I just want to see that they actually appreciate
a bit of
the
effort,
occasion.
A bit of endeavour.
Yeah, try.
An acknowledgement. I suppose it's like this when comics look like they can barely remember what town they're in. It's that thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, where they just sort of roll up and be like, here's the next night in my tour. But some American comics can be quite unengaged in that way. If you watch stand-up, like if you watch regular stand-up nights from places like Improv and all those other iconic clubs, some of the American comics, they don't even say hello to the audience. It's like they walk on...
Get straight in.
They go, they're like, so I bought a car, man.
But you know what? Like, I think
are you not even going to sort of say hello to me?
No, but you know what?
So I was with my boyfriend last night, and he said, will you go down on me? And I said, okay.
That's the MC.
That's a great premise, actually.
That's how I've seen a lot of comics start.
But you know, I think maybe in America, the audiences are scary. Like, so people, it's such a heckle-friendly audience.
Really?
People, I think so, they're probably just used to going, get straight into it, get to the joke, get to it as fast as you can.
Yes.
Otherwise, I'm going to get taken down. And some people,
it's not just that.
They're not really into punchlines either.
They like anecdote. Have you ever noticed?
So, Trump? What do we think of Trump? Oh, I'm voting Hillary. Anyway, I was going down on my boyfriend last week.
It's polemical. It's polemical and it's pointing stuff out and it's opinion and stuff like that dressed up as gags.
But stand up evolved that way. It was historically like some sort of art of protest over there,
right,
where it was kind of like protesty and comedy. It didn't necessarily need to always be funny. Sometimes it just gave people a space that they wouldn't ordinarily have.
But I think the reason why the Americans don't bother with, because we are devils for, we're the opposite. British comedians, Australian comedians as well, Kiwis, they come out, they go, you know, hey, how you doing? You alright? Good to be here.
Bit of silly chit chat.
Bit of crowd work. What happened on that t-shirt? You know what I mean? You lose a bet? What happened?
Yeah.
And that's all fine. I always say that, by the way. And comedy gold. And basically, it's interesting because the Americans, but I think it's partly because the Americans commodify everything. And I think the audience are like, you know what? Just do your stuff.
Mm.
And the Americans are complicit. It's like, oh, just, we want your material.
Mm.
And the comic understands that. Whereas in the Brits, we've got to pretend to be their best mate.
It's art.
Yeah, but also we've got to be like funny best friend down the pub, haven't
but
we?
But you know what? We're very classy, the British.
Oh, I agree with you there.
The Americans want to be us. And in America, it's all about what you got to sell, how much money you're going to make. I'm paying you this money. You deliver the goods. That's what it was like with Amy Schumer.
Mm.
You know, she's got this massive audience. She's making a lot of money.
Let's talk about grammar schools.
Yeah.
Right.
I went to grammar school.
Really?
Where's a grammar school?
Okay,
is that where they teach?
Really quick. So you, well, basically, it's his grammar. And you know what? It's criminal that I interrupted that punchline.
So terrible. I didn't even have it ready.
Luckily, this isn't live. We can just go again. Basically, you have state schools, yeah, which are owned by the government, which provide an excellent education to our children.
Yeah.
And you don't pay for them, only through general taxation.
Okay.
And then post-war, they developed sort of premium state schools, which were allowed to have an examination so that if you got to a certain grade...
Smarty pants?
Yeah, smarty pants school.
Are they subsidised by the government?
Paid for by the government.
Oh, okay.
So basically, this is the government having two types of school. School that doesn't have an admissions policy and a school that does.
I went to a school that had an admissions policy, the only one in my state.
Wow, and that's why you turned out the way you
did. That's why I became a comedian.
That wasn't a waste of taxpayers' money, was it?
But basically, Mark, I'm all for grammar schools. I went to grammar school. And it is a way out for working class kids to get a better life and a better education.
So it's a meritocracy.
Yes.
I thought it was like a private school.
Private schools are for rich people who can afford to send their kids there. Grammar schools were for kids from working class, poorer backgrounds to have the same opportunities that rich kids have at private school and give them a break in life. And it is typical of the Tories to want to demolish that opportunity for working class kids. It's the same as
privatising
the NHS.
Wait a minute, there's
the
some
NHS.
Confusion here. The Tories are all about grammar schools. And
what's the issue?
Not
Theresa May, the new Prime Minister, who we got by accident after a drunken night in which we left the European Union. She wants to bring them back.
Wait, so what's the deal? What's the issue? So grammar schools are on the way out or in?
Basically, they have been phased out over the last 3 decades.
Okay.
So here's the problem with grammar schools. That was exactly what they used to do. You got a kid who's in a working class family. His dad is a coal miner. Mm. His mum is a housewife. Mm. But the kid's bright.
Yeah.
And dad sits home every night and reads with the kid. And they do mathematics and da-da-da. And the kid gets in. And that kid goes on to run a company or become prime minister. Yeah. And that's what grammar schools are about. And they're great. Some of our best authors, some of our best entrepreneurs, some of our best leaders
comedians.
Have come from grammar schools. Mm-hmm. And obviously comedians. Mm. However, now what happens is this. If you go to grammar school, you have parents, middle class parents, who tutor their kids and pay money for their kids to get good so they can get into the grammar school. So the grammar school becomes
instead of
private school.
To get the kid into
and also, if you have to be near the grammar school, then it means that a house, if you want to live near a grammar school, the house is worth £300,000 more than if it wasn't in the catchment.
So
that way they fail. Discuss.
But the thing is that... parents are moving towards any school now to try and get their kid into that school.
Yeah.
So there are brilliant schools in Muswell Hill, near where I live. Parents are buying all the houses to get their kids into the local comprehensive in Muswell Hill because is it a good school? So parents are going to do that anyway, regardless of whether it's a grammar school or not. Any good school is going to have parents buying up the properties around them. I think it's just a kick in the teeth for working class kids.
I've got a question. So basically... It's not a private, so you don't pay private school fees. It's all government subsidised.
It's free.
So why don't this is probably going to sound very altruistic? Why aren't all schools instead of just putting
It's for bright kids.
But why don't they just pump money into all schools and say at all schools if you're bright you get special attention and special
because you can't get that in a mixed ability school.
Nazim has shown great insight. Because
or just maybe a stupid question.
An ultra-right Tory thinker called David Willetts.
Oh, God, I'm an ultra-right person now.
But this guy was on the radio this morning on an inferior radio station to FUBAR. And he said exactly what you said, which is he said, if you look at the revolution that's happened in London state schools, because of vast investment, in fairness, since the Blair years, a lot of money's gone into education, that actually streaming, having one school which has all abilities, but where it's streamed. Mm. So, like, these 50 kids are really good at mathematics.
Yeah.
They can be among each other and compete.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's proving very successful in London, but not outside.
Well, actually, it's very difficult in London. I used to be a teacher. It's very difficult in London to teach kids in a mixed ability school where the range of abilities is so broad. You do have the bright, bright kids, but in the same class, you could have kids whose English is a second language, who are SEN, special educational needs.
Is that how you pronounce it?
So then, you know,
I thought SEN was a legal high. I've been on it. You had some last night.
You know, it's very difficult to teach.
Basically,
a class
you get very sleepy. You get very sleepy, but I wrote a lot of poetry.
Really?
Yeah. It's really
you're
nice.
So
you can either snort it or you can have it with cookies.
I use melatonin to get asleep.
Oh, well done.
So basically, you're saying it doesn't work. So that right wing guy's
And you know
wrong.
What? Because of immigration, there's a lot of kids in classes whose English is not a second language. You could have a class of kids and there's 10 different languages going on.
But then they don't go into the smart English class. They stick with the.
Okay, in a grammar school, two everybody questions. Is at your right. intellectual ability.
Before I let you go, we got like, I don't know, maybe 60 seconds. One thing that dovetails with the school story is on Facebook, anyone that's reproduced ever has put pictures of their kids in their school uniform. Wayne Rooney, lots of other celebrities have been posting Instagrams of their... do we care? Why do people do it? What's going on?
Look at my daughter. It's her first day at school. I'm so proud of this young lady. Hasn't she grown up? Oh my God, I'm so emotional. I'm going to cry. I'm going to wait outside the school gates.
What is his accent? I love it though.
That is just... Look,
it's also a kidnapper's charter, isn't it? I don't want to make light of it, but I mean, the underworld are loving this.
Do you know what? Some of these kids are ugly and they just should not be on Facebook. Look, I mean, it's really atrocious.
I don't care if there are photos of children on Facebook. I just don't like children being on the internet. I get children following me on Twitter. Like 7-year-old kids sending me private messages. Like,
don't you feel like Nazim's getting the excuses in early for the inevitable inquiry?
Keith Bowers inquiry.
Yeah. No, I freak out.
Like, I'll say it on the radio that they follow me.
They do follow.
Why do you youngsters following you? Is it because of your massive YouTube stuff?
Well, because there's a telly show in Australia that I did, and their parents and their kids will watch together. But I actually think they're like some undercover pedophile police trying to catch me doing... So I just block them. I always freak out thinking that's like some... You know, they can't get me on terroristy things, but they're going to try and make me out to be... So I block kids on... But it's, why would you let your kid on the internet? It's like letting your kid go to a playground at 2 o'clock in the morning when the kids are gone home.
You're very... Well, I didn't realise we'd get such wisdom from comedians. You guys are quite sort of... I don't know, old head on young shoulders.
Just come to see our shows. I'm at the Soho Theatre.
I'm on tour from 2 weeks' time all around the country. The Kardashians made me do it.
So that's it. So what's your Twitter handle?
It's Shazia Mirza 1.
And what's your Twitter handle?
Nazim _ Hussein. Children, feel free to follow me.
I'm loving the _. When are you at the Soho Theatre?
Right now, for the next 2 weeks.
Boom.
9:30.
Nailed it. You guys have been beyond magic.
Whee!
The station has been closed down because of 11 libel actions, but you know what? It was worth it.
I love you, Uncle Keith.
Ciao for now.